This is episode 6 with Elise Carr.
Welcome to The Whole of You. I am your host, Tanya Dahan, kinesiologist and Bowen therapist and author of Balance Into Your Life. I am here to inspire you to love life and to live out your dreams and your desires aligned with grace and gratitude.
Elise Carr is the soul of Stella Moose. She combines ancient wisdom to light her clients' way. Elise is a disciplined student of the ancient esoteric wisdom occult mysteries. She is practicing Raja Yoga and is also a certified Tantra practitioner, Reiki master, holistic life and health coach, as well as a writer, speaker, model, and artist. With Elise as the light bearer in your darkness, she will invite you to journey together, illuminating the way for you to live life as your most authentic, unique self, healed, liberated, and aligned, here to serve the world with the skills and gifts that only you have from a place of consciousness, heart, and mind. The blending of what she offers is much like psychology for your soul in a modern world. Honoring the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual layers that has brought you here so far. Healing, balancing, and harmonizing the physical body, emotions, and heart with the clarity of mind, guiding you deep into knowing yourself as soul. Her sacred guidance, spiritual and soulful mastery, nourishing expertise, and inspiring hard-won life lessons, knowledge, and wisdom is here to share for you to shine, as Elise is forever here to serve you. We chat about how she went from modeling and journalism into sacred guidance, how to navigate through darkness, chakras, and how to use them wisely, the masculine and the feminine roles and their differences, and so much more. I am ever so delighted to share with you so much wealth, health, and wisdom from Elise.
Hello!
How are you?
Good.
Now, have you always walked the spiritual path? Because you've got a pretty interesting and wonderful sacred life. Would you be able to share with us a little bit how it all began and where you got to where you are today?
Yeah, sure. It's an interesting question when I think about have I always walked a spiritual path. I think sometimes some of us who are in this world, the spiritual world I'm talking about, and who are aware of it, we weren't always aware of it, but we kind of always walked it, if that makes sense. So I think from a young age, there were little things that looking back, I realized I was always connected to this, whether that was being in nature or very, very sensitive to others' emotions and very open-hearted when I was quite young. And it was through life experience and let's say relationships, whether that's with friends or beloveds or partners, that kind of closed up at different points. So almost kind of was really in that space and very alert and then kind of withdrew and was out of it. And now it's taken me time to kind of get back in it and make it a career. Yeah. How I got into this space, it was never the plan. I mean, I started modeling when I was 7 and I studied journalism and public relations in university. So I was a foreign correspondent journalist and an international model in my 20s. And in a nutshell, it just lacked substance. And there's been a part of me that's always craved substance. And whether that's conversations with people I worked with or jobs that I was assigned to do, it wasn't nourishing me. I didn't feel fulfilled, even though I was good at it and I could do it. And that goes for both journalism and modeling. So I knew somehow within me, while I thought, well, this is kind of it was never enough. So I was always hungry and always searching for more. And the catalyst, I suppose, that changed my life entirely happened when I was 22 and I was modeling full time overseas. And I got an ultimatum from my partner at the time then who wanted me to come back, or it's like, how do you have a relationship when someone's living on the other side of the world? And so I did come back, and I wasn't ever into the sex, drugs, rock and roll side of the industry. I loved the creativity and the creating of beauty. So I worked very hard, very long hours, never had an issue with food, always loved my food. So I was still eating well, but I was just pushing my body physically. I was emotionally probably deprived in some ways of expressing who I really was and also not having real connections, because it's a very transient world, the fashion world. And my mind wasn't stimulated. So I think I was all over the shop, and I came back and I was quite ill. I was hospitalized and had a cyst on my ovary that ruptured, and the toxicity that went through my system caused my heart to flatline 4 times. Wow. So had to, you know, be in ICU for some time and get my life back on track, kind of walking again, driving again, and take that healing time. And it was in that healing time that my partner left me, that I wasn't able to get a real job, as we termed it, with my degree. I wasn't going to be modeling on a catwalk anytime soon. I had to recover, and that did mean time in ICU. And then obviously that was back home, kind of learning to walk again and drive again, all those kind of things. And I wasn't no longer, I suppose, anything I thought I was. I wasn't who I thought I was, because I couldn't model. I couldn't get a real job with my degree. I couldn't, I guess, do those kind of things. And my partner left me, so I was no longer a girlfriend. So I was kind of back at home with my mum. Lucky had a roof over my head. Lucky had her love and support. But that was it. I was just kind of a bag of bones, with no direction and definitely no spiritual connection. I felt completely isolated and alone, and probably at the darkest point of my life ever. I then had, you know, recovery time, and I remember having a conversation with my auntie who lives in England, and she said to me, you know, why don't you take all your emails that you used to write? Because this is back in the time where there was no Facebook. We communicated through MSN and Skype and detailed emails while I was living and modeling abroad. She goes, why don't you compile your emails, and as she put it, write a fab book. And something just stuck with me. And I mean, I was a journalist. I didn't know how to do creative writing. I wasn't trained how to write novels and story arcs. And I didn't even question or think too much about it. I just kind of got out of bed and sat in the study and glued myself to the chair and started literally copy and pasting old emails together. And that's how I guess I started writing this book, which now 12 years on, I'm trying to get a literary agent for, as you and I have chatted before about, Tanya. So that was my, I think, lifeline to get me going. And it kind of gave me a bit of momentum, and it gave me purpose to get up every day, because I had a story to tell, even if there was no audience yet. But it kind of gave me a belief that I have a purpose, and I can use my skills and I can do something. I can share a story that can help others. And that story was talking about the unglamorous side of the modeling world. That story has now evolved more into talking about spirituality over materialism. But it was only a point. I then realized I was hungry for more wisdom. And that's always been a driving force within me, I think. And that's why I went back and did my master's in communications and cultural politics and women's studies. And then I moved to France and just packed my bags and went on my own, very heartbroken after that last breakup. Mm. And kind of had to die again, in a sense. We had to grieve that love story, because it was so deep. I had to fully kill off parts of myself that no longer were me, because I realized how much I lost myself in that relationship, how much I suppressed of my emotions and my true spiritual essence. I mean, I don't call tarot cards your connection to your soul, but let's say, as an example, back in my teens and early 20s, that was something that I loved, and I stopped even looking at that as just kind of a joy, I suppose, more than like, you know, the oracle to tell me my life story or anything. But little things I deeply suppressed and I swallowed in that relationship, and I had to go to France and figure out who I was, and I studied more over there. At university, I got an editor for my book. I did all different things. I modeled, and I just used that time. I was now 25. I used that time for the next couple of years to figure out who I am and what I want in the world. And having just finished my master's, I created this concept of Stella Muse, and I knew something would come of it. But it wasn't until I moved back to Australia in my late 20s and thought, okay, I need to kind of combine here this bag of spiritual tricks. So I went and studied my final Reiki master's, and I went and studied coaching and became certified in that. And so, yeah, just studying and getting different pieces of paper, including coaching and my Reiki master's, and then exploring Tantra and becoming certified as a Tantra practitioner, and then realizing I wanted to weave all this together, because I liked the idea of variety and I liked the idea of helping people at different points of their life in different ways that resonate with them. For some people, it's physical. They want that healing. Other people want something more mental and more psychological. Other people want something that's more heart-based. And I felt that I could reach people in these different ways by offering different doors, I suppose, for them to come to. And hence why I created the healing space with Stella Muse, and hence then creating sacred guidance and then offering tantra as well. So everything kind of led me to this point now. And obviously more and more of my work is becoming heavily influenced by the esoteric and the ancient wisdom, as it's called, I suppose, which is really the oldest philosophy and the oldest school of thought that people from, you know, Einstein to Rudolf Steiner studied and embodied. So yes, it's ever evolving and ever growing, and I'm ever studying and ever learning so I can be of better service. But at least now what I do has purpose.
So in kinesiology, we work with the physical, the emotional, mental, and the spiritual layers of a whole person. And so what you're doing is quite similar. It's like you say, psychology for the soul. So, I mean, I'm a big fan of integrity and self-belief. So many of us are taught that our self-worth comes from outside ourselves, from our competitors and what our competitors are doing. But I believe our best self-love comes from believing in ourselves, not just following the crowd. You're following your own flow. To have that self-belief, you know, that you're going to get through what you're going to get through. At that real time of your life when you were in hospital and you had that really dark time, did you have that self-belief?
I think I became aware that it was there somewhere. It was almost like lost in the fog of such heartache and sadness and pain and all those kind of things, but it was always there. It was like a tiny little ember that was left in my heart as opposed to a roaring fire. And I realized I had to stoke that fire and I had to nourish it. And that's why I had to, you know, take some time and sit with questions and let my physical body heal at the same time that my emotional body had to heal. And therefore my mind could then kind of get back on track. And ideally those aligned so I could connect to my higher self. And I call that my soul. So I fully believe in us needing that self-belief. And I guess I look at that as like an anchor in our heart, like where the soul anchors in, where we have a deep knowing. It's like a knowing and a feeling and overall sensation that we can do this.
So you talk about when you reach that point where there's like a bridge where you can say, do I want to stay where I am or do I go over that bridge and move forward? Well, what about the people that actually can't move forward? Would they just stay where they are, or do you think they just, you know, eventually will make it to move over to that bridge and move forward?
I think time is an incredible, incredible gift that we have. And when we talk about it, I see this from the perspective of sometimes time being lifetimes. So it might not happen in this lifetime for some people, for whatever circumstance, whether that's karmic or that's emotional work they haven't processed, or it's a mental block, or could be physical issues that can stop them. But I believe we're all going to get there because I think that's the purpose of humanity. But I do feel in saying that it doesn't mean it's easy and that it takes work. So for some people, they have to devote a lot of energy and time and will to do the work to heal, let's say, emotional trauma in order to be able to get over that point. Or it can be mental trauma, or it could be, let's say, physical abuse or abandonment. I mean, there's so many things that we all experience. So that crossing over as such, that crossing the bridge, it's big work no matter what. Some people seem to have an easy route and it's like, oh gosh, how do they do that? I think if we ever have that perception, be it a perception, right, it could be false, or it could be the fact that perhaps that person has done this so many times before in other lives that this time it is easier. You know, or someone who's stuck, they are going to be stuck. And no matter what we do, no matter healing techniques, psychology, you name it, it might not get through to them for where they are right now. And that's okay too. We all have our own unique journey and path to follow.
And isn't it wonderful when you do get through that other side?
Oh, and how many other sides do we have to go through? It's like you just get through one bit, you're like, okay, I can breathe for a moment, and then you kind of throw back in the deep end again with the sharks.
But you know, feel like you can look back and go, wow, that's what it was all about. And well, that's what it's been like for me. You know, you can look back and you go, oh my God, that's exactly why it had to happen that way. Or sometimes it starts to make a little bit of sense.
Yeah, and that's a very beautiful thing to say, I think, Tanya, because often, especially in this fast-paced life, we sometimes don't actually acknowledge how far we've come. It can help that stoking of the fire that we talked about. It can help that self-belief, or it can just help be a reminder of, I have the ability to do this. I can keep going, especially when we're in those dark nights of the soul or those dead-end roads where we feel like there is nowhere to go. So I love what you say there. It's quite wise.
And why, thank you. Our society teaches us to suppress our emotions, which is probably not a very healthy thing. Why is it important for us to express or at least acknowledge our emotions and feelings?
I look at the human body as far beyond just the beautiful physical form that we can touch. I see the body as having also an etheric component, and the etheric body is kind of like the blueprint that the physical is built on. But then beyond the etheric is the emotional body, then beyond the mental body, and then soul. And it's like that physical body, the etheric, the emotional, and the mental, they all have to be aligned and in harmony, kind of like a song. They all are different instruments, but they come together to create that. And then the soul can work through. We can then be our highest version of self. If one part of you is out or disconnected somehow, that highest part of you is not going to be able to flow through you. You're not going to be able to be who you're here to be and do the work you're here to do and serve how you're meant to serve. So if, let's say, your emotional body, like you mentioned, is still traumatized, something that happened to you when you were 12 and you're now 47 and you can't get past that, physically you're not going to be able to show up properly. Mentally, you're not going to be able to show up properly. And while you'll develop coping mechanisms, like let's say you might develop a very strong physical exterior, you might develop a very intellectual mind, your emotional body might still be at the developmental stage of a teenager while the rest of you is a grown adult. So there are repercussions to not doing the work on each of our bodies or vehicles, as we call them esoterically. So we have to see ourselves whole. That's why holistic health, when we actually look at that, I guess, from the truest essence, is very powerful and very dynamic and really big work. So we can't resolve this in one kinesiology session or one sacred guidance session, as we know. This is something that people have to take on and understand connects to every single choice they make and every single thought and people they connect with and places they go to and all of these things. It's all connected because, as we know, energy follows thought. We hear this all the time. It's we call it an esoteric truism. It's like kind of a fact of the universe or a law of the universe, but we don't understand how powerful that is. Yeah. So it's a really big deal to sort out your stuff. Let's put it like that.
I know, but you've explained it so well and it's so true. Like if something in the physical is not in harmony, then how it's like the sympathy of the orchestra of our soul is just not playing in tune. And that's such a beautiful way of explaining it. And also I love chakras. We use a little bit of chakras in kinesiology. I think we're a little bit light-minded with the terminology of how chakras are used. I believe chakras never close down. They're always like part of us. Could you explain to me how chakras is really important in your work and why you use them very carefully?
And like ideally I wouldn't even use the word because I think in the Western world, we're so focused on, like, as you've mentioned, like people think they close them down or they have to open them up. And we're so kind of glamorized or bathed in this false light that in order for us to be spiritual and awakened, we have to cleanse and purify and open our chakras. And this misconception, I think, can be really dangerous. Mm-hmm. And that's why when I work with, let's say, chakras, I'm technically not working with a chakra. We believe in my school of training when it comes to the esoteric side of things, it's an absolute no-no to do any specific chakra-focused work until the body is prepared. Now, as we just kind of mentioned, that body means your physical body's purified, your emotional body's purified, therefore also the etheric, your mental body's purified, and you are like a cleansed being as such. You are a clear channel. Your symphony is sounding perfect and you are ready. So there's massive work to do. So that massive work, if we still want to reach people in this beautiful new age spiritual world, we still kind of got to call it chakra work, otherwise no one's going to get it. But I do it from a sense of the quality. So what does the chakra really represent? Yeah. Because what we need to get to understanding is that a chakra is a gateway. It's a gateway to consciousness. So let's call it a door. If you walk, you know, up to a beautiful door, let's say it's the door of our heart, You're not just going to stand there and be in awe of this door. You want to go inside. You want to explore. You want to feel and taste and sense and see and learn. So a chakra is a door. We don't stay there and put a crystal on it and think of a pretty color and a piece of, you know, felt that's cut to the shape of a lotus and just kind of pray to that. It's like literally staying at the front of a door instead of going inside. You wouldn't even do that if you go to your friend's place. You want to go inside and see your friend. So the inside is the quality. The inside is the essence. And we need to learn what that is and start embodying the quality. So let's take the heart, because most of us are very drawn to it. And especially if you're in the new age world or you're walking a spiritual path, you probably are quite drawn to the heart because you feel things, you sense things, you know things probably from a kind of a sensory place, not a wisdom mind place, but a feeling place. And that means you're someone who has a connection to the heart and probably would gravitate to that. Most likely if we had a conversation and I'm like, how are things going? You'd probably tell me how you're feeling as opposed to how you're thinking. I feel like this. I feel like that. So you're a heart person. Also, just having that awareness of what you gravitate to can be really helpful. Knowing which quality of the chakras you are quite strong in and which you are weak in. Because if you know I'm a really a heart-based person, then maybe you know you have a sense of compassion for others perhaps, but maybe the flip side is you could learn more compassion for yourself. That is all part of the quality of the heart chakra. Yeah. And then the other way is like, well, which part of me do I need to work on? And sometimes those of us that have more open-hearted nature, sometimes we neglect the physical body because we're like, oh, I've got too many people to look after. I can't go to the gym. Or I can't get to yoga. Or some of us who are very heart-centric kind of go, well, I don't need to think. The mind needs to be shut off. I need to feel more. It's all about the feeling. So sometimes we get into this kind of, I guess, unbalance and dis-ease in ourselves because we focus on certain chakras. The sex center, the second chakra, is another chakra that gets lots of attention. Pretty much all of humanity has that center open. If not all the way, then most of the way, it doesn't need to be focused on. Yes, you might have childhood trauma from sexual abuse, neglect, relationship heartbreak, all those kind of things that can connect to that space. But often we dwell in places that don't need work. We actually need to be aware also that the chakras need to kind of raise to a higher space. So let's say the sex center, the second chakra, actually balances out with the throat center. So the throat center is when we kind of rise within ourselves or raise up the highest nature of the sex center, that high creativity nature. It becomes the throat space. So it's like in Tantra, some people get confused. They think they need to move sexual energy. We're not moving sexual energy. We're moving the desire. We're moving the focus. So if we look at the chakras, the second chakra and the fourth, they balance each other out. If there's issues in the second chakra, there's most likely going to be issues in the fourth chakra. And you're not really going to be able to harness the power of the throat center until you've probably done the work in that second chakra. So just having understanding of how they connect and how they work together, but not forcing anything. When I say doing the work, I'm talking about if you want to work on the heart space, you want to open as such the heart space, learn to love. What is love? Love is selfless service. Love isn't kind of clinging to someone and worshipping and devotion. That's devotion is the old way. We need to look at how we can embody the qualities of each of the chakras and live by those qualities. And in doing that physically and emotionally and mentally, we will begin to become more aligned with the chakras. Therefore, they'll be spinning and opening organically in their own time, in their own way, when you are actually ready to handle the power that they offer.
And I find in kinesiology, when we test up a chakra, usually there's actually two chakras that test up. And that's amazing that you say that, because you just said that usually with the second one, the fourth one might be out, or they complement each other. I think that's really interesting how you've pointed that out, because they are, it's again, it's about the yin and the yang. There's always the opposite, but there's also, you know, how they complement and work with each other is really important.
Definitely. It's a whole entire system, a system that's far more complex than we realize, because, I mean, they're just, let's say, the seven key main chakras that we're aware of, but there are the minor chakras. And we've got all the nadis in the body, which kind of connects more to that etheric body I talked about. It's so complex. There's so much we don't even know, and partly because so much isn't even translated to English. So we need to read the ancient text to kind of just get, let's say, a cupful of an entire ocean. So we have to be quite humble and very, therefore, careful as we approach these and just be aware, be as aware, you know, of everything we do, realizing that we don't actually fully know all there is to know. So we should be very careful if we're trying to force anything or do things that, say, a teacher tells us just because they've trained in India, because they may not know either. What's really important is that, I just wanted to say one thing, I suppose, that came to me was that each chakra corresponds to a different state of consciousness. We have to understand that that means there's many layers of consciousness that we need to be able to access before we could, let's say, open that next lotus, that next bar, that next chakra wheel. So just be aware of that.
One thing I would really like to talk to you about is just the masculine and the feminine energies. And if you could just explain between the two, because we have the masculine and feminine inside us, which is like the yin and the yang, which we talked about. But how important is it for us to have a good relationship with the masculine and feminine in our lives, but also within ourselves and with others or our beloved?
Yeah. From a tantric perspective, we understand that this world we live in is a duality. And tantrically, we call that Shakti and Shiva, which is goddess and god. You can look at different modalities where they'll say, as you said, that yin-yang, masculine, feminine. We can even look at it like day and night, or we can look at it like summer and winter. There's so many different symbolic ways of interpreting it. And therefore, this is symbolically speaking when we talk about these different energies. It's just like if we live all in one space, we neglect another space. If we lived all the time in summer, we would burn, because we need the rain of winter. We need that time to kind of retreat and go within ourselves to heal before we come out again for rebirth. So it's understanding really cycles and rhythms, understanding there are going to be some times in our life where we're very much driving, we're pushing, we're getting things done, we're ticking the boxes, we're productive. This is masculine. This is Shiva energy. And there's going to be other times in a cycle. So let's say, especially for a woman in a month, where she's much more retreating. She's in her hyper-feminine, going within. Sometimes that's within to the darkness, within to confront her own demons, those things she has to heal and work on. We can change in a day, in a week, in a month, in a year. Look at all the cycles of life, of nature. They reflect us too, even astrologically, and how the planets are, how the moon is. So we're very much interconnected, having understanding that the macrocosm is obviously in the microcosm. So everything out there is within us. We have this dance then, this day and night, this Shakti Shiva, this wild and this calm in a union as individuals. So when you have that within you, that's one thing to deal with. When you have another person, your beloved, in front of you that also is trying to balance their cycles and rhythms, it can create an interesting dance. So we need to learn to have that compassion and loving kindness and respect and all those beautiful elements, non-judgment, as an example, with a beloved and within the relationship, because this dance is so intricate and so fluctuating. It's going to be very unique for everyone. So learning yourself, better to know yourself, learning to know your beloved will help you know the relationship.
I mean, that's very good advice, and that's really the challenging aspect in relationships, is trying to balance that masculine and feminine and to see it as that way. I just don't think in society or here we sort of really honour those cycles of life and how important they are. We seem to think there's something wrong with us if we're in some sort of cycle. We should not be in that cycle, rather than actually really honouring that we do need the dark and the night.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we're in a world where we think we can take a pill and it will fix it. We're in a world where we want quick fixes that don't actually deal with the root cause. So that's the distinction. Like, that's kind of what you just highlighted. So getting to the root cause means we have to understand ourselves. It means we've got to do that work and figure out why my beloved always reacts like that and storms away every time something challenging comes up, instead of standing with me and having an adult conversation.
Yeah.
So we might need to calmly talk to them about that and figure out why, and maybe support them and have extra compassion and figure out what's going on there. Obviously, they have to be open to doing this work too, because in a relationship, it takes two.
It does. And I also find a lot of men are really struggling at the moment. I mean, how do you see that reflected in the work that you do? I think it's just this sense of maybe men aren't allowed to show their vulnerability or emotion, and so they tend to linger a lot in their masculine, but they seem to deny their feminine. And in denying that feminine, they're also denying the feminine, or almost their beloved as well.
Yes, and there's definitely truth to that. I find, you know, men who perhaps grew up in the 80s or even before that find it harder than those who are more 90s onwards. And this because the 80s, going back in time, it was toughen up. It was boys don't cry, have a beer. So the mentality of life then was so ingrained that now as men in their 30s, 40s, 50s, it's very hard because they're so hardwired. They're almost crystallized like a crystal. It's almost like that set and programmed within them that it's very hard to shatter and essentially change how they see the world. Their perception is kind of stuck. So it's big work if you're in that point now. It's totally doable, but it's going to take work. The younger generation who are perhaps, you know, more so in their 20s or teens now, they are kind of more open to feminine activism. They're more probably aware of the duality that they're in to some degree. So I think age and generation and the environment and social influence has really impinged on how the men of the world are today. And that's why I think as mothers, as lovers, as sisters, as friends, it is partly our role also to help gently, lovingly invite men to see we can do it a different way, to go, hey, we can do this together. It's okay to cry. You are safe here. And to be the nurturer as the feminine is. And this can be tricky because we don't want to drop into mother role when we want to be lover. Yeah. But there are times when sometimes you need to be the rock and they get to be the ocean. And it's almost a role reversal. We step into more of a masculine yet still loving, strong, stable, unwavering role. And they get to be the water, like moving and unaware of where they're going to go next and unpredictable, and to be so held and safe in that container. Now, we all need this. It's just in, you know, response to your question, this is sometimes how you as a beloved or myself as a beloved can hold space for the men in our lives. And they have to be open, obviously, to receive that, which sometimes can be tricky.
And I do see that a lot. I see that the men are actually really craving to be in their feminine, you know, when you practice some of those principles and the masculine comes into being the feminine and you hold the role of the masculine, they're actually really craving it.
Because we need harmony.
Yeah.
It's impossible to live 24/7 in a fired up, like almost adrenal fatigue state of achieving and, you know, maybe it's success driven or maybe it's making money or providing for the family. I mean, there's a lot of pressure also on the masculine role. And this can be done by a man or woman, but we're just saying the masculine role.
Yeah.
So the masculine needs to learn to be. Instead of doing 24/7, they need time to be. That means after work, there's just an interlude where they might have a shower, grab a snack, put on a bit of sport, whatever it is, just to take a moment to breathe and exhale. Ideally, they actually might want to go do an exercise class or be in nature. There's other ways of doing it. The default might be putting on television, but that's okay sometimes too, if that's what they need. Kind of, let it go. That's my day. And then they step into the new space of home. They step into the new role of father, of lover, of husband, whatever that is. Because it's very tricky when you're in a very almost laser focused, one direction only, get this task done mindset, which all of us can be in, to then shift to have to be kind of multi-armed to kind of look after children, dinner, fix this, put the washing on, you know, things that women find that come naturally don't come naturally to men. So we have to give them a bit of space to be able to kind of step from one space to another, and they have to be willing to step from one space to another.
And to take off their armor, because some people don't want to go and take off their armor, and they bring their armor with them to the bedroom and they wake up with their armor and go to work in the same armor. And, you know, it is creating that real adrenal fatigue and It is the go-go, and you do see people just burning out constantly.
Alma's a tricky one, and I can speak from professional and a personal perspective here, because I've definitely had heart armor, and that was through trauma, and I use it as a protective mechanism. It's like, no, this beautiful, soft, delicate pink flower has been trodden on before. It's never happening again. I'm walling up. So you can love, but you're not as open to receiving love. So this can be men or women, and I've seen this with others, and it's dropping that armor as such is very, very challenging. It takes a lot of self-awareness and willpower and deep compassion, as well as a real understanding of where it came from, why you keep doing it. Are you aware of the cycles you go in, your default setting, when you like really amplify it, when those walls go up even higher? And are you able to be in a setting, even if just with one person, and let one gate open and let one more gate open and drop one more guard down? Because it's a really, I guess, a process that demands extreme safety and protection and love, because there is no way that person is going to drop their armor if their mind is controlling. So often you'll find this concept of armor is more so those people who are very mind-based, whether they're highly intellectual or highly critical. Not so much the heart people. They tend to just keep wearing their heart on their sleeve and get trodden on and trodden on and trodden on. Mm-hmm. And these are extremes I'm talking about, right? So learning who you're dealing with, if it's a client or if it's your beloved, starting to perhaps follow their patterns, see their cycles, gently, lovingly bring it to their awareness if they're open to it, that's a really good place to start, because it's not going to happen overnight. Sometimes these things can take years. And I've worked with clients where it does take years. And that means they're seeing me on a regular basis. They might also be seeing, you know, maybe another practitioner for something else, or a doctor or something. And they're doing their work. They're learning proper meditation. They're learning what they need to change in their environment.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And I think, you know, if we all took on a little bit of this mindset, then I reckon the divorce rate would be more of a holistic approach, because we're giving each other more of an understanding that what triggered is not necessarily the other person. It's some unprocessed trauma in our nervous system. And so,
well, that's the root. The trauma is the root. The person's the catalyst, perhaps, or that person just keeps you over the edge, but it's not them.
No.
It's the fact that what they said reminded you of what's happened to you when you were 10 or 27. And that, while you think you're over it, you might be over at the point where you can function still in the world, but you're not over at the point where you're thriving, and therefore it is still having a hold on you.
Yeah, and so why that's most of us are feeling, a lot of us are feeling so overwhelmed in the world today, because, you know, like you said, we think we've dealt with it, but it's just being triggered again and again and again.
Yeah. Or we deal with it enough, like it's putting a Band-Aid over a really bad bite. It just stops a bit of blood getting on your outfit, but it's not going to help the skin actually come back together again.
Yeah.
You know, we just do these little quick fixes. That's why you see people going from one event to one healer to one session to this to that, to reading this book, to buying this crystal. It's like a little honeybee drunk on the nectar of the New Age spiritual world, but actually not making any change.
Because we're
not actually transforming.
Yeah.
They're just really, it's called translation. It's kind of like the same thing is being given to them in different outfits, and no healing's taking place. Because otherwise, why would they do all that but then go to work the next day or a couple of days after that and then feel the same again?
So it's so important to really get to know ourselves and be really aware, which is, you know, so important. It has been so beautiful connecting with you, and there are so many golden nuggets in what you've said, and I'm sure a lot of people will get some benefit over all these exciting things that you're doing as well. I'm so excited to hear that you're bringing a book out sometime in the near future, and I'm definitely going to buy your book, so put me on your list.
That's thank very you so kind. Much. Thank you, beautiful Tanya, for having me. It's been a pleasure to share these things, and sometimes we don't have these conversations enough, and sometimes we don't make the time to do this kind of work for ourselves, you know. And if I kind of think full circle to what we've been talking about, a lot of this comes back to creating time and space to make sure that that flame within us, that self-awareness, that self-belief, that self-knowing is nurtured. Because the better we know ourselves, the better we know others, the greater service we can be. And if humanity is doing that, we're going to change the world, you know.
Yeah.
A whole army.
And you're amazing. You are the most beautiful one of the most amazing people that I've ever met. So thank you so much for sharing all your wealth with us today. It's been great. Thank you.
Tanya, it's my absolute pleasure. Thank you. And from one soul to another, there is so much love here. And I'm very grateful for all you do in the world. You're a bright light and the world needs more of that. So thank you so much for having me and sharing the time to have a chat today as well.